This program was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local programs, go to our website, freshfm.net, or download the Access Internet Radio app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Ray Caird. Ray worked as a television and radio journalist before becoming editor of the fortnightly national farming publication, Straight Farrow. He then joined the corporate world and authored such publications as The Coaching Manager, How to Handle the Media, A Guide to Getting Involved, and articles in Management magazine. Ray and his young family escaped to a regenerating lifestyle block alongside Abel Tasman National Park. From there, he founded the Abel Tasman Educational Trust and became president of the Nelson Kiwi Fruit Growers Association. Since then, he has been a company director and a trustee of the National Bays Heritage Trust. Ray's first major book, Blood of the Flax, is due to be released at the Nelson Arts Festival this month. Welcome to Top Writers, Ray.
Yeah, kia ora, Callan.
Ray, tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, Blood of the Flax, Harakiki o Toto, or Toto o Harakiki, is a coffee table book that celebrates our iconic plant, Harakiki. It only grows endemically in New Zealand, so it's naturally ours, and it's very versatile. It runs from the mountains to the sea. It's very sexy, and it produces abundantly, it's beautiful, and it's tenacious. And the book itself tries to capture all this, so it's very visual, with a lot of photograph, and people tell me it's a beautiful book. But that's because of my designer, Penny Royal, who's just done a wonderful job. And the cover photo looks through red flowering flax taken from the top of the centre of New Zealand and looks out over Nelson and Tasman Bay. But the story really starts in Gondwana land and skips through the molten mists of time and weaves its way right up to things like the fashion garments of flax on the catwalks of London and New York. Yeah, and really, I suppose, if I want to weave this all together, Galen, it's about survival. It's about the survival of flax as a plant. It's about the survival of Maori. It's about the survival of my own flax milling ancestors. And ultimately, the survival of us all. And along the way, I do some snippets about my own personal flaxing journey. And we might read a little bit about that later.
Right, it is indeed a stunning book. Now, flax to many of us is a plant that grows in the garden, attracts the tuis and bellbirds. Some use the flowers for dyeing wool, and others use it to spin with, and many use it for weaving. Yet to your ancestors, it was much, much more. Tell us a little about your ancestors' involvement in flax mills. Like, what are flax mills, and what was their importance to New Zealand?
Well, yeah, my Scottish pioneering ancestors came out here and basically to work the flax. And a flax mill is basically a large shed with a steam engine powering a screaming machine called a stripper and another rather vicious machine called a scutcher. And the flax, the big, huge green leaves of flax are fed into the stripper, and it strips the green off and all the wet and the gunge, and then it's dried in the fields, and then it comes back and it's stripped through another vicious machine which takes off hands and arms from time to time, called the stripper. So that's basically the flax mill. At peak, there were 600 of them throughout New Zealand from North Cape to the Bluff. So it really was a big boom and bust industry from about 1860 through to the end of World War One, really, but it went up and down like a yo-yo.
Right. What was their importance to New Zealand?
the importance to New Zealand, really, we need to start back in Māoridom, really, because basically it was fundamental to Māori existence. They couldn't survive without it. That's, you know, when Europeans arrived, Māori chiefs were known to say to the likes of Captain Cook and Banks, look, how can you survive without flax? Because it wove their garments, it gave them their rope, gave them their kete, their baskets on which they transported everything, their sandals for their feet, virtually everything. And besides food, it was the really most important thing for their survival, because of course it replaced copra, which was the fibre used for those purposes in the islands. But down here, of course, they needed something else, and they were fortunate to find hatikiki.
Right, I think I should just point out that linen is produced from flax, so that's why we had the flax mills to produce linen as well.
Well, let's clarify that linen flax is a different, totally different plant to our harakeke flax in New Zealand. We took the name flax because the flax plant used in the northern hemisphere, which grows on the steppes of Russia, predominantly was the main supplier of the British market. Was fundamental to their existence up there for a whole range of reasons, which we can talk about perhaps down the track. But over here in New Zealand, they called it flax because it was close to the linen flax. Our flax is a totally different species. A linen flax grows about a metre tall. It's got purple flowers. It is harvested in the fields. Ours grow huge, but they both produce fibre, hence the word flax became a common name, even though the plants are different.
Right, now it has a very long history going back to the Napoleonic Wars, and the rope on the HMS Victory was actually made out of a type of flax, wasn't it?
Yeah, the world, and in particular the British Empire, which was ascendant at that time, was dependent upon rope, which meant fibre. And when you think about, you talk about the Napoleonic Wars, well, they went on for decades. And of course, the British, in large part, won, with the penultimate being the Battle of Waterloo, where Nelson's flagship was the Victory. Now, the Victory was typical of the boats of the line. There were 200 ships in that category. One ship, the Victory, required 50 kilometres of rope to run it, the rigging, the anchors, and everything else. Now, that's enough rope to run from here to Motueka. Now, there were 200 ships in that category and 800 more of lesser, all requiring rope and fibre, so that when there was war, there was always the huge danger of the supplies from Russia and also hemp from Manila and the Philippines, the two main sources of supply, being cut. So the British Empire was very and fundamentally interested in ensuring other sources of supply, and hatikiki could provide that, be stripped down and made into rope just like they could with the supplies in the Northern Hemisphere, but they could control it from down here. They couldn't control the Russian or the Philippines because they hadn't colonised them.
Right. That's really, really interesting. Now, can we go back to weaving with flax? Today, yeah. When we weave, we usually use the whole of the leaf. But way back when they were making the cloaks and that, they actually stripped it right back to the fibre. Could you tell us a little bit about how it was used differently way back in history?
Yeah. Well, we're talking about when Māoridom arrived, these skills they brought from the Pacific Islands. But 1,000 years ago, when they arrived and discovered flax and also discovered that it was a damn sight colder in general in New Zealand than up north. They needed the fibre to not only to do all their range of fishing and netting and hunting and all, but they need it for their clothing, etc. The weaving was set up in, and women were the ones that did this, and they did it communally in what's called the Whare Pora. Now, the Whare Pora is a house of flax, and around it was a tradition surrounding not just the techniques of the flax weaving, where they stripped and created the fibre by pulling a mussel shell down the fibre and creating these beautiful cloaks and wonderfully fine garments. The whole tradition went right back to Papatūānuku, the Earth Mother, and there's a whole cosmic link, so that when they wove the flax, indeed when they even plaited the flax into kete, there's a whole link to the whakapapa, the traditions, and the whole cosmic, the whole holistic firmament is linked through to flax, which in Maori tradition was the last plant created before man was created. So in the words of a tohunga, in the Uruweas, in the flax lies the story of man. The weave in the kete carries the whakapapas, the stories of Māoridom. So not only was it for survival in the physical sense, it was part of their spiritual existence.
Right, there seems to have been a resurgence in the use of flax, especially in weaving. What do you think has brought that about?
It's really part of the Māori Renaissance, which the Māori Weaving Cooperative was formed back from memory in about the 1990s, and it's grown hugely from there. It's part of the same tradition of Ngā Māori carving, the weaving, the carving, the various arts and crafts that are stemming out of the rediscovery of Māori traditions, of Māori stories, of Māori culture. And, of course, young people today can be imbued with that culture in a way that people of my generation were deprived of. So there's a huge flowering of all sorts of techniques and skills and stories surrounding Harakeke.
Because when I was a child, we all learned how to weave with flax. Mm. We all learned Māori games and that sort of thing. Mm. And then as I grew older, it just seemed to stop. And now it seems to be coming back in, which is a really, really good thing. Hmm. Right, could you read us something from the book, please?
Yes, sure. I mentioned that part of the weave of the book is some snippets of my own personal journey. And I'll read you where I started. And this is winter and the first part of the section is my journey, my secret place. I snuck through the hole in the hedge. You had to be quick, like the secret seven, never to be spotted. Rickard and Bush was my secret place, especially the back flax swamp. It was a damp and trackless, spooky place for a seven-year-old, even a super sleuth one. And those fierce tuis. I gave up trying to shanghai them. Rustling leaves and squelch, they heard me coming. Defeated by swamp and flax, I returned to the bush tracks ways that were safe and predictable. It was to be a long time before I discovered Rickerton Bush was the last remaining remnant of the once extensive native bush on the Canterbury Plains. And it was to be even longer before I embraced flax and flaxing as basic to my whakapapa. And perhaps across, given that's the first Start Snippet story introducing that chapter, I'll give you the last one, which links up nicely with one of the centre of New Zealand themes in the book. My journey, my love affair. Every Wednesday morning, I go for a run up the centre of New Zealand. The path is steep with lots of flax. Sometimes someone plaits the end of a leaf, a little gift surprising. These harakeke signal the seasons and ongoing life. They help me with mine. They are generous to bees and bellbirds and tui and all sorts of other little creatures. They boost my spirit with their strength and beauty, and I love them for it. And I muse on our survival together. I have one other, if you would like one other piece. How are you going for time?
Yeah, no, we can have one more.
Okay. This is a poem which is really one of my darlings, but authors know about darlings, sometimes they don't make it to the final book. But this is really a darling of mine, and it's not in the book only because all the themes I'm about to read you are already there. But here it is. Flax blood beautiful. The blood is ours, the tenax of the formium, the basket of the strong. Waves lap us, clouds kiss us, and winds bend us. We are the muskets of Moromanui, the rope of the Tory, and the palisades of Gate Power. Yes, it is us at Gallipoli, on the Western Front, and in Vietnam too. We are both hybrid and pure in the gardens of the world and the tukutuku of the marae. In London and New York, catwalks of fashion embrace garments of harakeke. This is all flax blood beautiful from the kete of Aorangi, Hokianga, and Rakiora.
Thank you. Now, the book is divided into six sections, starting with winter, followed by spring, summer, autumn, then Matariki and solace. What inspired you to choose that format?
Well, it was a struggle because there's a range of themes weaving through the book, as you will have gathered. However, in the end, it was an obvious choice because the flax and the seasons reflect each other, of course. So there's a progression through, and it starts with winter, and which is really the time when flax is dormant. And my ancestors migrated from Scotland in that winter period out to New Zealand. And likewise, there's a whole range of Māoridom linkages there too. So it's really running through the season, running through spring when the flax milling start and the tuis are tuing, and through to summer when it was totally all go and there were 600 flax mills up and down the country, and Māori were in on it too. They were the original traders of flax as a commodity. There's lots of stories about warfare that could be related, and I touch upon them right through from the musket wars through to World War I, and they all involve the commodity of flax being sold, not used to weave things, but to actually facilitate a warfare. So it was a boom-bust industry that rotated up and down on how many wars there were either in New Zealand or the world.
Now, the song you've chosen today is Marlon Williams' Hello, Miss Lonesome. Could you tell us why, please?
Well, I really love Marlon Williams. I think he's a he's a stunning young New Zealand singer with a great future. He's a former Littleton lad and sang in the Christchurch Cathedral Choir. But he's got a beautiful tenor voice with a lovely vibrato to it. But I like him most because he's versatile and he's cross-genre, just like my book is cross-genre with all sorts of linkages. He covers country and folk and bluegrass music. And they're the styles that you can hear in this title, Miss Lonesome.
Right, let's listen to Marlon Williams and Hello, Miss Lonesome.
Hello, Miss Lonesome, I see you back in town. It's funny how I lose my mind when you come around. Papa thinks that he knows you, Mama knows you more. She knows where to hide when you come knocking at the door. The king in his castle, beggar on the street. Miss Lonesome's in the eyes of almost everyone you meet.
Thank you so much, Ray, for talking with us today. Ray Caird is one of the speakers alongside Pick Pickett and Lily Woodhouse, which is the non-diplome of acclaimed New Zealand author Stephanie Johnson, who will be in discussion with Steve Brawnius at the Nelson Arts Festival on October the 24th, 5:15 at the Johnny Cash Room at Nimmat, and it's only a koha entry. And Ray's book, Blood of the Flax, will be launched there. And then it will be available from all good bookshops and the copy press. I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz. And this is the last interview for this session for 2019. but we will be back with you next year.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Other great local programs from Fresh FM are available through the Access Internet Radio app or our website, freshfm.net.